This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Imagine this scenario. You're living in an expensive city, working two part-time jobs, trying to make ends meet. One day, you get offered a full-time gig from not just one, but both part-time jobs. What would you do? Make a pro-con list, flip a coin? James Landman quit both jobs to live in a van. He's a musician who moved to New York years ago to follow his passion, but he got caught up making a living. That changed in 2017 when he set out to play 100 shows anywhere that would welcome him. Ashley Thornburg caught up with him at the Folkway Social Club in Fargo, where he played gig 71 of his 100-show tour.
I made a plan, and I thought, you know, if I, like, go around the entire United States and Canada and I do 100 shows in 2017, then things will change for me for the better. I don't know what it'll do for my career, but I know that at that point I will be one step closer to doing music full-time. And that's kind of all I knew at the start, and now it's been a total game changer for me personally and professionally. I'm doing music full time. I'm, you know, it's generating all these opportunities. It's also just been an amazing personal experience, you know, for me. Kind of restored my faith in humanity. I think after this last year, I think things got kind of dark. We lost a lot of musicians. Politics is pretty nasty. This might be a product of living in New York City, but I kind of lost faith in humanity for a little bit there. And this tour has totally restored my faith in humanity. I realized that people are so three-dimensional. And we get used to Facebook and social media and judging people in this two-dimensional landscape. And it's these knee-jerk arguments and reactions. And really, we all want the same things. And I think at the heart of it, people are pretty good. I've been really taken care of on this tour. And since all the shows have been Pay What You Want, it's been an awesome exercise in trusting people.
Yeah, well, obviously, I work in public broadcasting, so I'm familiar with the pay what you want, when you want model of fundraising.
Hint, hint.
Walk me through some of the earlier shows when you really, I mean, is there a moment where you really felt like, yeah, this is working?
You know, the first couple of shows was just kind of like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Is anybody interested? I'd say the moment I knew that it was really working is when it went from, like, friends and family friends who were the first people to be like, yeah, I'm totally into that, to second degrees, then third degree, and then fourth degree connections. I played a show, somebody I met randomly at their house. They introduced me to someone who had me play a show at their house, and then they introduced me to someone at, you know, that house, so on and so forth. And at one of these shows, there was just, like, you know, 30 people crammed into this tiny apartment in Oakland, and it was just magic. Everything that I want as a songwriter, you know, people are listening to what I'm doing and we're just interacting on a personal level. That was when I realized this is awesome. This is the best way for me to be heard as somebody who spends all my time and energy writing music. It beats the hell out of a bar anytime where people are kind of half paying attention. I don't mind being background music as long as I'm getting paid to do that. But if it comes down to, like, no guarantee of money, having people really engage in what I'm doing, that's payment enough.
So what are the reactions out of the house concerts?
The reactions across the board have been overwhelmingly positive. I think people forget how easy it is to just get a bunch of their friends together and have this amazing excuse to just see people in person. At this point, everyone's really starved for face-to-face interaction. And music's just a really easy, I think, excuse to get a bunch of people in a room and to get them just bonding over something, over a shared experience.
It never gets hard?
Oh, it definitely gets hard. It definitely gets hard. I mean, I think a lot of people think that my job is waking up at 2 p.m., joyriding around, scoping out a city, having a couple of beers, then rolling out and playing a show. The reality is a lot less pretty. One thing I like to do on Instagram and social media is I like to show some of the uglier sides of things because I think it's funny. I think everyone's trying to put their best foot forward. But honestly, like 70% of my day is just holing up in a Starbucks, drinking their awful coffee, and just corresponding with people for hours. Tour routing, explaining to hosts how the show works, following up with connections. It's a ton of admin work. And then on top of that, learning new covers, practicing. It's a lot more of a face-to-face job, almost salesy, than I think that I realized at the beginning. I consider myself a high-functioning introvert. I say this all the time. I can play a show in front of people, but on stage, there's like a fourth wall, so it's fine. I overlooked that I'd be interacting with people for like 6 to 8 hours at every party on end. When I get back in my van at the end of the day, I just close it, sit in the silence, you know? I mean, people are always like, hey, do you ever get lonely? And I'm like, not really. You know, like I'm actually like chock full of human interaction. And I mean that in a good way. you know, that's why I like driving alone in a van. Like, it's like totally peaceful for me. It's my time to like unwind and recharge.
Well, let's talk about living in a van, because you're living in a Dodge Sprinter. This is the size of a minivan. It's taller, windowless in the back. I gave myself a tour of your one room. It's sparse. I love, though, that you have four jackets with you on this trip. You have two black jackets, two denim jackets. You are, I should point out, wearing a denim shirt and black pants. You clearly subscribe to the minimalist everything should go together theory. Yeah, were you a minimalist going into living out of a van?
Oh, no. No, no. I mean, you know, I moved from Seattle to New York in like 2008. And that's when I kind of started over. And within New York, I moved three times, from Harlem to Bed-Stuy and then to Bushwick. So I've been downsizing for 4 years. By the time I left New York to go to California to buy the van, I barely had anything. Even then, I was like, what's most important to me? And it was my instruments and a few things to try to not look like a piece of shice on, you know, on the road, you know.
Give just a little descriptive tour of the inside of the back of the van.
It's windowless. People don't really, they think it's just a work van. For all intents and purposes, it was a plumber van, actually, in Chicago. It's supposed to look like a work van. On the inside, it's sort of paneled in pine tongue and groove siding to kind of look like a cabin. There's some linoleum floor, because it's the most practical for stepping in and out on rainy days. And then there's like a dual platform where there's storage underneath, and the second platform is a six-seater dinette that converts into a bed when the table goes down. So it's totally optimized for sleeping and working. Before I started this tour, I thought, I'm going to do the work that I was doing before, which was freelancing, doing graphic design and web development from the road. So I was like, I need a desk. So like that was super crucial. So it's just a desk and a bed. And, you know, the bed is just when I have flashbacks, traumatic flashbacks. I'm a very low-maintenance person, so when I was with a band in Seattle and we toured around the United States, I would always be the one on the hardwood floor because I was like, you know what, it doesn't matter to me. I pride myself on being low-maintenance, but touring that way is pretty horrible. Yeah, after months of being on the road and sleeping on floors and couches, it kind of dusts into your soul, kind of destroys it. For me, it was just super important that I had a place where I could crash anywhere I needed to, saving money on hotel rooms and not imposing on hosts.
Do I need to point out to you that you don't have a bathroom in your van?
You do not need to point that out. That's the number one question, one of the top questions I get. I should have a top questions list on my website. No bathroom. There were like a lot of ways to have a bathroom in a van. A lot of people do it. And I don't want to offend anyone who lives in an RV, but in my experience with RV bathrooms, I find them to be kind of gross. Like, I think they get kind of smelly and it's more maintenance. You have to go dump the gray water in the tank. So for me, it was like, again, like, how do I go as minimal as possible? I belong to a gym called Anytime that's all over the country, and it's 24 hours a day. So that's where I shower and work out and sometimes go to the bathroom. But also my office, Starbucks, is also a good place for that as well. So, you know, for the most part, I haven't been in a position where I haven't been able to shower. There was one time in Phoenix where I went to a different gym before I joined Anytime, thinking there'd be a shower, worked out, got really sweaty, and was just like, great, now I have to drive to Flagstaff, and I smell like a gym bag. So I pulled over in this campsite, it was like 34 degrees, and I somehow rigged up a Alhambra water jug. It was just the coldest shower I've ever taken in my life. I'm not dirty just because I don't have a bathroom. I want to clarify that. I get my showers done, right? So if I have to, I'll take a really cold one with a water jug, but that's only been one time.
Describe your musical style and your influences.
One of the cool things about this tour is that I'm getting what other people think my musical style is, and that's informing me better, because I think it's very hard to have perspective, very clear perspective on your own. I used to say, like, I think I sound like a mix between Frank Sinatra, Sam Cooke, and a couple other people, but a lot of people have been just kind of giving suggestions here and there. I'd say the best way to describe my music would be neo-soul, and I think that kind of encapsulates R&B, jazz, soul, a little rhythm, you know, just pure blues. Basically, like, my voice is kind of like a 1950s or 60s crooner. And the style of music I play is just on acoustic guitar, but there's a lot of seventh chords and stuff.
Woke up this morning remembering, witnessing the death of chivalry. last night. And through the fog, everything's a haze. Then it all starts coming back to me slowly. Because I wake up in my bed with a pain inside my head. I'm wishing I could forget last night. Now all I got is a heart filled with regret.
So I was really greatly influenced by music of the Motown era. That's what we grew up with. And, you know, we also grew up listening to Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole. So there's definitely a very retro vibe running through what I do. And I don't really listen to a lot of modern stuff. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I get on these waves where I kind of get obsessed with one artist for a little bit. You know, pretty recently that was Dusty Springfield. Listening to her catalog, I mean, I'm just blown away by her vocals and the instrumentals and stuff. And I'm just really in love with the sound of the 60s in general. So I think I guess some people might call it like a blue-eyed soul, but for lack of a better politically correct term. But I have brown eyes, so screw that, you know?
You have starred in a Scandinavian insurance commercial?
Yeah. So when I was in a rock band in Seattle it's been 7 years now, this Swedish producer came into town and was like, to the record studio we were recording at, he goes, "Do you know any good singers who could like try out for this role?" I had no idea what it was. They have me come in. Everyone's blonde hair and blue eyed, and you know, they're all just like speaking Swedish to each other. Before I know it, I've got the part, and the part is I'm cast as this insurance agent. The filming was kind of hilarious. Basically, we're running through the woods in Seattle because they thought it looked like Sweden, and we're running to help somebody who's just crashed their car. And I appear as soon as the car is crashed, and I start singing "Don't You Worry About a Thing" by Stevie Wonder.
Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing. No, no.
And then magically the car's fixed. And that was the premise of the commercial. You know, they're like, great, that's a wrap. They get all the filming they need to do. Did 3 commercials with them. And then all of a sudden it goes back to Sweden. And I start getting all these messages from Swedish people and Norwegian people and Finnish people. And they're like, "I love your commercial. I'm absolutely in love with your music." So I get this like Scandinavian fan base because this commercial is airing on primetime like 4 times a day. And I had no idea. Mm. Back then I was with this band, we were touring the US, and the smart thing would have been to just immediately go to Scandinavia and just start capitalizing on that. But I, you know, just kind of after like 4 years of repeat, it just kind of, you know, faded out. But I still have some amazing people on Facebook who pop in from time to time, you know, from all over that area, which is really cool. So, you know, this house concert thing is funny because I think all it takes is a couple people being into the idea to get started, mm-hmm. and I have that in Scandinavia. So I might you know try to do UK and Scandinavia next year. I think it'd be kind of cool to take it international, you know.
Yeah, you're going to have to barge over your Dodge Sprinter.
I know, right? Chitty chitty bang bang style. I don't know what I would do. I might have to rent a van out there. I might have to just leave. This is, the name of my van is Valhalla, actually. Originally I had dreams to make it like a Viking palace, but you know, it was a lower priority than getting the tour together.
Well, you are in a good place to find people who would be able to help you decorate that, yeah. Like the Norwegian heaven.
Yeah, I feel like there's a big Scandinavian contingent here in Fargo.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, northern cities. I like that though. Yeah. See, I'm doing like the American Scandinavians first, and then next year the OG Scandinavians.
What have you noticed about the little pockets of America that you've visited on this trip? You started in Southern California, you're around Arizona, Utah, you headed up to the Pacific Northwest, Seattle area, trucking it across, even more north of here into Calgary, Alberta, and then I noticed in the rest of your tour you're heading towards New York and Philly, and I'm sure there's lots of others that I didn't mention, but that's lots of little pockets.
No, you know what? It's funny. This is kind of recent because then I just played Custer, South Dakota, which is somewhere I never thought I'd go. What I've found is that small towns are my favorite places to play because people really, really appreciate when you come to their town. I've noticed that, you know, people who are kind of off the main grid of normal tour routes and whatnot, those are the most fun to play. It's just because people really appreciate it. And like, you know, I'm pretty easy to please. Like, if people are into it, I'm pretty happy, you know? I always joke that I'm unsinkable with the van. I'm like, it's not about the money. I'm unsinkable, you know? The other thing I noticed, just to kind of go back to that, like, idea of, you know, division and inclusion, is that, like, people are all the same. Like, they really are. Everywhere. Small towns, like, they've got their own little quirks, you know? Maybe one person collects more guns than the next person. But ultimately, like, if you remove politics and you remove religious discussion and things like that, people are, like, way more similar than I think that they'd want to admit or believe. And I'm seeing that, like, firsthand. I'm like, you're just like that. You know, I'm, like, pointing, you know, all over. I'm like, you guys are the same. It's interesting as a stranger how people deal with a stranger, like how some people will completely take me in, put me up, and how some people are just kind of, like, a little bit weary at first. I'm finding the smaller towns, people are a lot warmer than the big cities when it comes to, you know, I don't know this guy, what's he all about? This small towns are like, I want you to stay with us, and we're going to show you all around the town. That's kind of cool because I'm from a big city. I'm from the Bay Area originally, and I lived in New York, and I lived in Seattle, and I lived in LA. It's cool to see that.
What will you be doing at the end of the 100 Days tour?
If you had asked me that a month ago, on a particularly dark and stormy night where I, you know, just hustled really hard for like a 7 shows straight, I would have said take a vacation. But the reality of the situation is that this has been so good for me that it would be really stupid for me to take a break. It's a champagne problem. It's a rosé problem. I am basically just going to continue until I get to the next level, whatever that is. You know, I think for me, people were like, what's your plan after this? I didn't know this was going to be such a success. It's taught me a lot about how to tour as an indie artist. It's taught me where I can make money and how I can make it a profession. I think that after the 100 Days tour, you know, I might switch to more of a regionalized tour where I bounce between a certain region for a certain amount of time and then I slot off an entire month to writing, because I haven't done a lot of writing on this tour. It's just been go, go, go. And I had dreams of writing on the road and just being this, like, machine of, like, putting out songs and playing shows. But I've been operating at half capacity where it's been all about the shows, all live shows, all playing, which is great. You know, it's made me a lot better. But putting content out is, like, the name of the game, I think. If you want to stay relevant, people's attention spans are short. Yeah, I know. Well, that's the other thing. I'm like, I kind of laugh. I'm like, you know, maybe I'll be like that guy who kind of like does what whoever, you know, I don't know, the Italians introduced the slow food movement, right? Maybe I'll do that with music. I'll be like, you know, I'm going to play a 16-minute song and you're going to listen to every word. Yeah. Just retrain people to have patience.
James, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for interviewing me. Appreciate it.
Landman also played for the recent TEDx event in Fargo. He films each concert and hopes to make a documentary about his tour. You can follow him at James Landman, that's LANMAN.com.